The Guardian.
Guardian podcasts are partnered with audible.co.uk. For a free download, be sure to check out guardian.co.uk/audible, where Guardian listeners can choose any audiobook for free. See the page for more details.
Football Weekly supplement. Special edition today, Chelsea champions of Europe. Well, that was unexpected. Dogged like Drogba, ruthless like Frank's open-top sports car, united like Ashley Cole's eyebrows. Today, we salute the victorious Blues and call Bayern out for the big all-mouth, no-trousers bottlers they surely are after more munch and muffs than K.D. Lang's autobiography. There's Rafa on the blower from Munich and hammer time. There's the playoff final. How did West Ham get on against Huddersfield? All of that and more in this Football Weekly supplement. Right, okay. Studio filled with pastries, piping hot coffee, and a pretty sizzling Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Also on board today, Amy Lawrence. Hi, Amy.
Hiya.
Hi there. And John Ashdown.
Hello. Oh. Although we ought to put out that the only piping hot coffee is yours.
It's mine. One day, John. One day. Yeah.
But that kind of suggests that the rest of us have coffee, which is cold or tepid. But
there's no coffee for you.
We don't have coffee at all.
You could have brought coffee. Can I just point out, I did bring pastries for everyone, which you just had the opportunity to mention and you didn't.
No.
So, listeners, I just brought pastries for everyone and they didn't mention it. Good. All right. How about that then? Hey, how about that? Our predictions were completely wrong and so were everybody else's. But who could have thought, that this Chelsea, without those players, could go and do this?
John. I did. I had money on them to do it.
Oh.
Well, but at the same time, I was wrong. And Bayern should have won. Anybody who thought that Chelsea were going to do it had a tactical plan that was going to work. Was wrong, because the tactical plan I don't think did work. It was designed to restrict Bayern's chances, and they didn't. I mean, Bayern had tons of chances that they should have taken. But once it went into extra time and Bayern had made those sort of tweaks and kind of panicked, I don't think once they'd scored, they thought that was it. And extra time was a kind of non-event, really, and that drifted into penalties. And then,
then it was written in the stars.
Apparently so.
Amy, how did you live this extraordinary 120-minute plus penalties experience?
I thought it was very compelling to watch, and I found myself thinking I was quite glad that I wasn't emotionally involved one way or the other, because I found it was, your stomach was getting increasingly tense just watching it as a neutral. It was fascinating, and I think that there are people sort of that listen to this pod, I've noticed on some of the comments, that think this pod is quite anti-Chelsea. But we've all got to congratulate them for...
I know it says here on this piece of paper.
Achievement. Come on, James, you can do it.
No,
go on, Barry.
I'm standing by to congratulate them.
No, I think when it comes to Chelsea, I think a lot of people feel very conflicted if they're not actually Chelsea fans, obviously. And when you see Roman Abramovich up on the, not exactly podium, but whatever it was that they'd had up there to award the trophy, being sort of handed this enormous great piece of silver that everybody craves. It was difficult to sort of not feel a bit like weeping when you see something like that. But
because of the 100 millions shivering in Siberia.
Whichever way you want to look at it. But on the other hand, when you look at it just as far as the players are concerned, they were so brilliant in doing what they did. You can't really fault any of the Chelsea players, except you'd argue that Drogba was silly to have given away the penalty, but obviously he redeemed himself in every other way. So it was an outstanding performance from them for the last few games of this Champions League. And people are going to come on and say, oh, well, it was boring, they didn't play good football, it was defensive, all this kind of stuff. We heard the same things a couple of years ago with Inter. And, if you win the thing and everybody wants to win, who cares?
Yeah.
And good luck to them.
Gazzetta this morning saying, this was not a story about footballers, this is a story about men. And I think that sums it up pretty well, Barry.
Yeah, they have been outplayed by Napoli, Barcelona and Bayern Munich, beaten them all. I think Chelsea, for what they've done over the last 8 years, deserve a European Cup. And it's sort of strange that this is arguably their worst team they've had in this time
and
has won the tournament for them. And let's face it, whose heart wouldn't be cheered by the sight of Roman Abramovich being handed that trophy while Chancellor George Osborne looks on from the background with a big shit-eating grin on his face.
Was that him?
Yes.
Oh.
That was almost a Gary Neville kind of noise.
Gladden the hearts of people everywhere. It was a heroic performance last night. And once again, Chelsea had to ride their luck. And we got criticised when they beat Barcelona for saying they were lucky and they were outplayed. But that's a fact. They were lucky and they were outplayed, but they still did enough to win.
They themselves said that they were outplayed.
Who said?
Chelsea did.
Did they?
Yeah, in the post-game comments, I think Lampard certainly said that he thought that Bayern had played better.
Well, Lampard said that he didn't think they'd played very well. Or it wasn't their best performance sort of thing.
They did play very well, though. I think for what they set out to do, they actually played very well.
They didn't play as well as they played against Barca, though, because they did restrict Barca to the odd chance here and there, whereas Bayern, I mean, Bayern should have been outside at half-time, really, the chances that they had.
Mario Gomez,
as we sort of predicted on one of the predictions we did get right on Thursday, when we famously put Huddersfield into League Two, sorry Huddersfield fans, was that Bayern would attack down the wings with Ribery and Robin, and that's what they did, and they cut inside and crossed to our old friend Mario Gomez, and what a performance he had.
What?
A big, useless lunk.
Yeah, it is extraordinary when you look at his goal stats.
Well, he scored, I think, 41 goals this season. And yeah, he's a good player, but he looked possibly as if he was a bit overwhelmed by the occasion last night.
They did, didn't they?
Bayern players were a little bit like that. I mean, perhaps not Schweinsteiger and to an extent the goalkeeper, but they did look, you know, there was so much was made beforehand about the fact that Bayern were favourites because they were at home, but it was clearly there was so much pressure on them. I think the anxiety was, even if you looked at their faces in the sort of pre-match lineup, they looked really incredibly nervous, I thought, anxious. It's that fear of losing which sometimes outweighs the sort of will to win, and if you know what I mean.
Did you notice when the penalty extra time that was missed, where Schweinsteiger was? He was sat in the penalty, his own the Bayern penalty area, facing Manuel Neuer. Two sort of, I don't know if he does this every week, because I don't see them every week. Maybe he does, but he just wasn't looking the watching the penalty at all.
On his knees, the wrong direction.
Yeah, and then Manuel Neuer had to go, we've missed it, and get him up and get him running up the other end. It was really strange.
Mm. Well, big occasion. Was it Drogba? Was it English spirit? Or was it Jupp Heynckes' decision to take off Thomas Müller just before the end of regulation time? Here's Michael Cox, who, being Michael Cox, went back to Dortmund v Bayern to find out what Müller would have been doing at the corner Bayern conceded from. Answer, marking at the far post.
Wasn't it a near post header, though?
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I was trying to remember that.
Is there any sympathy for Bayern? They've now been runner-up in three successive competitions this season.
It's their own fault,
Amy.
They knew what they were getting into. Here's Chris King for you. Let's hope this one's a bit more accurate. The last three times an English club has won the Champions League, they've done it on penalties. What's this about the Germans? Asked Chris King.
Well, I think it's a myth that the Germans are...
Certainly was in Arwen Robben's case.
Isn't it the case that they were the first international team ever to go or lose a match on penalties? I think the Czech Republic beat them. Or it would have been Czechoslovakia at the time.
Mm.
But, that could be completely wrong.
No, I think you'll find it's right. And the Guardian's got an upcoming series of Euro previews, video previews, which actually details that very instant.
Are you involved?
I might be.
Well, I did a knowledge question on is it a myth about Germans and penalties a few weeks ago. And with the international side in big tournaments, it's not at all. I mean, they win, I think they're undefeated, aren't they, in five shootouts. And with the club sides in European football, it was very true up until Schalke lost the UEFA Cup final on penalties a few years ago. And since then, they've had a much more sort of average record. Up until that point, it was something like 17 wins and 3 defeats. It was like an astonishing record.
Although they did come through against Bayern Munich like that. What about the decision to take off Müller, though, who was arguably Bayern's best player until that point?
Well,
was that Bayern thinking, we've done it? Or were they already celebrating at that point?
Definitely. And I mean, you know, it was one of those at the time where as soon as you see it happening, you think, ooh, that it just seemed like everybody, I think, sensed straight away that was a dangerous move to make. I mean, it's so obvious going to be having had most of the ball on the other end of the pitch for the entire game, you're going to invite a bit more pressure on yourself late on. So, but Drogba was just incredible with that header. I mean, just goes to sum up, he's not been everybody's cup of tea as a the way that he conducts himself always on the pitch, but as a player, what an incredible player for Chelsea.
He's 9 finals, 8 goals.
I mean, you'd only, you know, have to think the people in the Ivory Coast must be thinking, what's happened here? Because he's, of course, famously missed two penalties to have won the African Cup of Nations for Ivory Coast. So they must be a bit miffed that it never works out for them. But obviously Chelsea, they're indebted to him. And when you think back to when he first arrived in his first season, he wasn't actually that popular with the Chelsea fans, which is pretty incredible to reflect that they were even booing him sometimes when he was diving in his first season in England. And it took him a while to win even the Chelsea supporters over. But when you look at it now, they have to offer him a new contract. And if you're Didier Drogba, OK, you're going to get a potload of money, but he's got that anyway. You're not going to go to China, are you?
Well, wouldn't it be a nice way to go out, though? Your last ever kick for the club.
Yeah, but he's still clearly got so much to offer that it seems... It's going to be a massive difficulty for Chelsea to face this summer if he does go.
Perhaps John Terry might like to go to China instead. Just throwing it out there.
What about John Terry?
Another captain's performance yesterday.
He was heroic. He had more costume changes than Madonna.
Here's Alan Foggon's belly. Considering Chelsea won it despite John Terry, not because of him, it was good of him to let his teammates take the credit rather than trying to hog all the glory for himself. Oh, wait a minute.
I mean, it was preposterous. He deserves to be part of the celebrations, but he did go a bit OTT. I saw someone was wondering on Twitter, I think it might have been Bruce Millington, the editor of the Racing Post, is like, if he's wearing shin pads, then this is the end of days.
He changed basically back into his kit
in order to be in the team photos. Yeah. And then I think for the second half, he pitched up in a tracksuit and then... By the time the penalties finished, he was in his full kit.
And in the team photos, he's there in his full kit in the middle of them.
Yeah, I mean, back when Manchester United won it and Paul Scholes and Roy Keane were suspended, they had to be sort of cajoled into taking part in the celebrations, and they looked embarrassed to be there. Now, they fully deserved to be there, as did Terry, but for Mr. Captain and legend, Chelsea did win it in spite of him. He was idiotic to get sent off against Barcelona, and that ruled him out of the final. So while he was entitled to participate in the celebrations, his effort to hijack them completely was a bit laughable.
Mm. It was quite a touching moment, actually, though, when there was Terry, Lampard and Drogba all sort of in a little three-way huddle at one point. And that was kind of like, I don't know, it was quite sort of... I was not untouched.
Tell you what, if in, say, 2 years' time we win that long-awaited Sony, if we ever get entered into the right category and we win a Sony, I like to think that we might have a huddle on stage like that, you know, and people will be saying, yeah, Jimbo's got back into his kit even though he was banned from the thing for getting the League One and Two confused, etc.
His last intro before Jimbo's off to go and do Shanghai soccer for his last big payday.
Ooh.
But if you look at the way that Luiz and Cahill performed last night, actually Terry might have some difficulty getting back in the first team next season.
Ooh.
They were both excellent, I thought. And much more disciplined than people have come to expect from Luiz. And if you're Gary Cahill, you must think England are going to win the Euros. 6 months ago, he's a Bolton player. He's turned up. He's had the most incredible time. Won the FA Cup and the European Cup.
Although, in terms of career redemption, how about Roberto Di Matteo? We'll come on to him in a second, but one player we haven't mentioned yet, and he was particularly fine yesterday, Ashley Cole.
Well, he's a sensational player, probably the best left-back in the world. His record...
We all thought he was a bit done, though, didn't we?
I think he's quite a big game player. It's weird to have a left-back who's a big game player, but he seems to relish the challenge of taking on the best wingers in the world, and he tends to come out on top. Maybe he sort of struggles to get himself up for league matches or something, I don't know.
Another player who's not always the most popular outside of Chelsea, who was fantastic, was Frank Lampard.
Right.
I just think his interpretation of his role and what he had to do for the team was fantastic. I think the way he'd been talking, if you'd heard him over the last few weeks, he really sounded, without going to Gary Neville about all of this, as if it was in the stars. And he felt very, you know, you could see that he really felt that it was their destiny to get it right this time and to win the Champions League.
All right. Well, in a second or two, we're going to speak to Raphael Honigstein, assuming he can stop blubbing for long enough to pick up the phone. But first, one of the real treats of the game, and there were many, were those extraordinary scenes at the end. The shot over, hang on, is that Roman Abramovich's shoulder as the players and the manager came up the stairs? And you could see there was Roman in his knitwear, and there's Roberto Di Matteo coming towards him. And there's this big moment, Roberto says what? I won it or something? And then a bit later he bounces along to him with a cheeky grin that is in no way reciprocated by Roman. There were extraordinary scenes of kind of internal politics being played out on a public stage.
I think one of the things that was most extraordinary about some of the pre-match hype about this Champions League was Ruud Gullit coming up with this pearl of wisdom, which was that Roman Abramovich actually doesn't want Chelsea to win the Champions League because it would put him in a difficult position about whether or not to keep Roberto Di Matteo, which I thought had to be one of the most nonsensical pieces of punditry in this Champions League. But it is a very intriguing situation because if Chelsea hadn't have won this Champions League, and let's face it, it's quite possible that it might not have worked out in their favour last night, they're in a position where they finished sixth in the league. They're not in the Champions League for the first time in a very long time. And there is, you know, no manager at the moment who's in the job. There's a bit of rebuilding to go on and there's, you know, potentially some important players going. It was going to be a very, very interesting summer for Chelsea. And it still is to an extent because now they're in a situation where they've got to think twice. I think decisions that would have been more ruthlessly taken had Chelsea not won the Champions League now become more complicated.
I don't know. My impression was that Abramovich is not going to be a problem either way. He can, you know, he's won the thing and that's great. He did his job. And I don't think, I'm not sure how much, I mean, I've no idea, I've not got his ear or anything, but I don't know how much it's going to weigh. And certainly I thought it was really interesting the way he just gave him a off you go, Charlie Pat. When Di Matteo came bouncing past, having won the trophy that had eluded him over 8 years, did you witness these scenes, Barry, or not?
Yeah, but Abramovich is an idiot, and nothing he does would surprise me. I would say he'd have no compunction whatsoever about not giving Di Matteo the job if he has someone else in mind that he wants to give it to. That's who'll get it, and he never explains himself. He doesn't have to explain himself. He owns the club. He can do whatever he wants. But trying to second guess him is yeah. Just, there's no
it's
point
like
to it.
Sphinx, isn't he? Except with his nose still on. But Roberto Di Matteo sacked by West Brom a year ago and now this extraordinary, although as you point out, they're actually lower in the league now than when he took over. So,
Well, Di Matteo over the summer was apparently one of the people that applied for the Sheffield United job and didn't get it. Was overlooked in favour of Danny Wilson. And that's quite a turnaround in 12 months.
It's extraordinary. And how about those Italian managers, eh? Let's just list it again. Serie A, won by an Italian manager. FA Cup, won by an Italian manager. Champions League, won by an Italian manager. Premier League, I mean, I could go on. I think there's so, what else is there? Oh, there's also the Russian Super League, he said, going on.
Yes.
And something else. All right, let's hear from Raphael Honigstein. On the line now from Munich, Bavaria, Raphael Honigstein. Raphael, good morning.
Hello, James.
Hi. Big night?
Hi. Big night.
Yeah.
Big night.
Extraordinary emotions. Ultimately, what was the atmosphere like for the sad Bavarian fans traipsing out of the Allianz Arena?
Yeah. Flatter than Guy Ritchie's flat caps, I'd say. Really, really, really deflated, depressed, frustrated. I think it's one way to lose one thing to lose a game, but to sort of throw it away that way Bayern have done. Manuel Neuer said, we had three match balls and we couldn't take any of them. That's what really hurts them. And Rummenigge at the banquet last night said that it hurt more than 99. I'm not sure it does, but in terms of the advantages that they had throughout the game, it's a real psychological blow for the team, obviously.
What do you think will have happened when they all went into the dressing room at the end of penalties? I mean, you mentioned what Neuer said there, and he put in that magnificent performance and then scored and everything. And when he thinks back and when others think back to the psychological weakness of other supposedly key players, is there any danger this Bayern team's going to turn on itself and rip itself apart in the aftermath of this?
Yeah, there's always a danger of that. They have to be careful. The whole Arjen Robben complex, will not go away.
Would Ribery have smacked him, for example?
Yeah, maybe. They've also got the most ridiculous game of all coming up. The Dutch national team, including Robben, will play against Bayern on Tuesday night at the Allianz Arena. If ever there was a game that nobody needed or wanted, it's that. But, the weakness is I think it's difficult to sort of to sit in the stands on television and kind of psychologize teams and players. I think here it was very much a case of one team knowing that going into penalties is a kind of a defeat because you should have done it before. Chelsea went there and felt, now we have a chance to win it. And that's how they took the penalties. And they felt incredibly confident. And with Bayern, they struggled to find five players to take the penalties. But also because three of the normal takers were all suspended. And you were left with guys who were injured, half injured, like Van Buyten or Contento, who never takes penalties. So it all came together. I mean, it was one of those situations. I'm not sure you can say, if you look at the whole 120 minutes, the way the team played, that they were in any way weak or bottled it, because they were the better team and they were going for it throughout.
Yeah. No, it was just watching the way that, for example, Gomez was approaching some of his chances. It did seem that the occasion had got to him. And I can only imagine that being the Bavarian team in the Bavarian stadium in the Champions League final, that the pressure, that the build-up must have been enormous on them.
Yeah, the pressure was enormous. I think with Gomez, you have a case, but that's nothing new. I mean, he can sometimes play like that if they play Bochum, in the second division. He loses his composure. He had a great start. He created some good chances, didn't take them, and then the second half onwards, he just completely disappeared. And that's one of the weaknesses in this Bayern team. They don't have enough depth in the squad to replace him. They also, in Heinkes, don't have the kind of manager ruthless enough to take somebody like him off because, he says it's Gomez, he's my number one striker, he's having a bad game, I'm still going to leave him on, maybe he'll do something. And that's what, if you want to go away from psychology, from luck, from misfortune, that's the one thing you can really say that has been endemic throughout the season and that hurt them because the depth wasn't quite there. The bench looked very uninspiring. Credit to the team for actually, going as far as they did in terms of the chances they created. But with one or two better players instead of Olic and these kind of guys, they should have won that game. And they know that. And that's something that Jupp Heynckes has to face up because it was his decision not to sign anyone in January because he wanted a harmonious dressing room.
He didn't take off Gomez. He did take off, though, Thomas Müller, which a lot of people in England felt was maybe a bit of a turning point in the game. What's been the reaction in Germany to that?
Well, there's two things. I mean, Müller later said that he had a calf problem. He really couldn't run anymore. So, and then it was a logical substitution in many ways because they knew that it's going to be high balls for the last 5 minutes. Van Buyten is an expert in that. If they'd conceded from the one and only corner that Chelsea had without Van Buyten, everybody would say, how could Heinkes not put Van Buyten in for the last 5 minutes? So I think that is sort of being a little bit too wise after the event. I think it made sense. They could push Timoshuk into midfield, which made the midfield more solid. I don't think that the substitution changed all that much. And, again, in the extra time, the dynamic didn't change because Bayern again were the better side and again created at least one chance that was good enough to score, whereas Chelsea didn't create anything. So I don't think you can really read too much into that substitution.
All right. And plus, to be fair, it was written in the stars that Chelsea would win. That's certainly the line anyway that's being peddled by the English media. Presumably it's a similar story in the German press, is it, this morning? Team of destiny, Chelsea. The heavens were on their side.
No, it's not really so much about Chelsea. It really is about Bayern's defeat. I mean, I think Chelsea are sort of in the background on page 5, 6. They kind of turn up as the team who ended up picking up the trophy that Bayern sort of didn't want to win. I think that is the take at the moment. And yes, of course, Chelsea have done well, and you have to give tremendous credit to them for what they did, pulling it off in Munich and the commitment and the confidence that they showed, and that is something that will be, of course, will be respected. I mean, Germans have a lot of respect for that kind of performance because for long stretches that's how German teams would win things, especially in that manner. But no, I mean, in Süddeutsche, we're a Munich paper. It's all about Bayern ruining their own dream in many ways.
Mm.
Rafa, just apart from the game itself, was the whole occasion a very pleasant one? Did people have a good time in Munich?
I think people had a very good time. The weather was amazing. There was reports or sort of news filtering through that everything was absolutely fine last night, that sort of Bayern fans just went home and shook the Chelsea fans' hand, and there wasn't anything happening. There were some fights on Friday night, some minor skirmishes, but no, it was absolutely fine. It was a great occasion. Of course, you know, you have 25,000 really, really happy Englishmen, but the rest of the city, 1.7 million in mourning. So, great occasion last night, but the mother of all hangovers this morning.
I believe you were entertaining our friend Fernando Duarte on Friday night, is that correct?
That is correct.
What happened, Rafa?
It wasn't just me and him for a romantic tête-à-tête. There were quite a few colleagues, and we went to my favourite Bavarian restaurant, and it was all very nice. And afterwards, the waiter came up to us and said, your seat, and he was pointing at me, was the seat that Roman Abramovich sat in last time he was in Munich in 2005. I mean, wow. I kind of knew that anyway. I didn't know that was his seat, but I knew that he'd been there. But it would have been nice to see him again, of course, but he didn't show up in the night.
So. What kind of high-end eatery was this, Rafa?
Not especially high-end, just really traditional Bavarian food.
All right.
One of the best places. And
What's the name?
It's called Spatenhaus. But another perhaps more exciting story was that one of our colleagues from Süddeutsche was tasked with stalking Abramovich during the game and sort of get to him or at least find out what he was doing. And he had figured that there's only one VIP toilet, so he'd spent most of his game outside the toilet and then actually did approach him to get a shot. Bodyguard got quite heavy, but Abramovich stepped in, said, calm down, and had his photo taken with him.
Wow.
I'll post it on Twitter later on.
In the toilet?
No, outside the toilet.
All right. It's a great story. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. All right, Rafa, super. Well, I'm not sure what your plans are, but Bayern, presumably, does this mean that they're back to square one? Are they going to unveil a new rebuilding project, or is it tweaks ahead?
Well, that is really the key question, because there is a danger that Uli Hoeneß, you know, who, of course, missed a very important penalty himself in the 76 European Championship, will see this as a lack of characters, and that you need bigger, you know, sort of more leadership type figures, and he'll go out and just spend again big. Instead, I think, you know, most experts or journalists or even supporters probably will agree that actually this doesn't need major tweaking. This is a pretty decent team, still quite young. If they buy smartly rather than big names for a change, I don't think they're going to be too far off. It's just a question of getting the coach decision right, because Heinkes will be there for another year, but then you really need someone who can tactically bring them to the next level, because you saw it a little bit yesterday. Everything they do is slightly random. I mean, there aren't actually really drilled tactical ideas. I mean, when you read tactical analysis about Bayern, it's quite funny, because you know, actually talking to the players, that Jupp Heynckes doesn't talk about these things. They go out and they sort of do things themselves, and then, you know, there's absolutely no point to analyze Bayern tactically from that level, because it really is about the intuition of Robin. If he wants to go left, he goes left. If Ribery wants to come over, he does, and that's good enough to beat most teams. And it was nearly good enough to beat Chelsea, but it wasn't good enough to beat Dortmund. And to be really, to come close to their true potential, they need someone who's a little bit more academic about these things, a little bit more technocratic. And that's going to be the big decision for next season, the season beyond.
Rafael, brilliant. Listen, have a super trip back. And thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Pleasure.
Cheerio, Rafael Honigstein in Germany. Little bit of a Bavarian flavour for you there. Tell you what, on the subject of London football, interesting, of course, Chelsea, the first London team to win the European Cup / Champions League. Spurs, meanwhile, missing out on their place in the tournament next year. Heartbreak for Harry and his chums.
I think it's really unfair, and it could have huge repercussions for Spurs because they're going to lose, or probably going to lose, players of the calibre of Luka Modric and Gareth Bale, who might have stayed if Champions League football was assured. But now they have a lot less motivation to stay at White Hart Lane. And Spurs earned their place over the course of a season, and to be dumped out by this, like this. And it's, you know, I'm not having a go at Chelsea here. It would be ridiculous as well not to have the defending champions in the tournament as well.
Mm. You think five teams, yeah?
Well, yeah, possibly, you know, have Spurs-Chelsea play off over two legs.
Ooh.
And see who gets the place.
On the subject of playoffs, can we just confirm, Amy, that none of the English teams will have to face preliminaries? So Chelsea go in to the group stages as the holders. And, of course, the top two, the two Manchester sides, are in there as well. Arsenal don't have to have preliminaries this year.
I believe that's the case, yes. But just to go back to Barry's point about the Spurs exodus, the only thing you would say is that this time last year, when Daniel Levy kept hold of his best players, particularly Luka Modric, when everybody probably expected him to go to Chelsea, they didn't have Champions League on offer at that point either. So I think it's not as straightforward as saying, no Champions League, therefore these players will go. But obviously it's going to be more difficult if there are attractive offers put in front of these players. The other thing to factor into it is that Harry Redknapp, I think, has only a year left on his Tottenham deal. So that's, you know, we're in a situation where Daniel Levy is going to sit there. He's either going to have to offer Harry an extended contract or perhaps not. And it's very unusual that, although Pep Guardiola did it repeatedly, but most of the time you don't find managers being in their last year of their contract and it's slowly running down through the course of a season because it obviously is very destabilising. So Tottenham have got to make a big decision about, you know, where they are and where they're going. And if they think, if, you know, because if they're going to offer Harry a new deal, it's got to be a good new deal and it's got to be for several more years. They're probably not going to get away with just offering him another year or something. It's not an absolute given that Daniel Levy is going to want to give a very long contract to Harry Redknapp at this stage, I don't think.
Interesting, interesting. Now, the other London club that had a big result on Saturday and arguably the biggest result of all, figures to hand, is, of course, West Ham, who beat Blackpool 2-1. In the playoff, the championship playoff final at Wembley. You enjoy this game, John?
Yeah, it was a great game. It was one of those ones that had people saying it was a great advert for the championship. It was really, really open. Both teams wanted to attack. Two different styles. Blackpool had the chances to win it in the first half. Matt Phillips missed a couple of great chances. And Carlton Cole, of all people, scored a really quite a good goal to give West Ham the lead. Blackpool got the equaliser, and then Ricardo Vazte popped up with the late winner. Vazte is a really interesting story, actually. I mean, he had quite a poor game, I thought, yesterday, compared to some of the performances that he's been putting in. But he started the season on trial at Barnsley.
He was released by Hibs.
He was released by Hibs, so he wasn't offered. He was given a short-term contract by Hibs. This was after he was a kid at Bolton under Allardyce. And was there for sort of 6-7 years and was kind of established himself, played sort of 30 games one season for them. But then in his last 3 years at the club, I think he only played three times, was let go and headed off to Greece to Panionios, so not one of the sort of big Greek sides. Was there for sort of 6 months, I think. Then headed up to Hibs after a trial there. Wasn't offered a contract at the end of last season. Headed off to Barnsley and impressed enough in pre-season friendlies against Hartlepool and Grimsby to be offered a year deal at Oakwell. Had a fantastic season, actually, up until January, but because they'd only offered him this year-long deal, Sam Allardyce was able to pinch him for around £500,000. And he's scored a ton of goals and he's scored the one that's taken them up.
Mm, absolutely brilliant. We never mentioned, you know, I was picturing Vazte and I was thinking about haircuts and I just suddenly thought, we never mentioned Kalou's extraordinary arachnid do. But there's no time for that now, because Jacob Steinberg's on the line.
Hello, James.
Hi. Big day for the Hammers yesterday,
Yeah, I've got a bit of a sore head today.
Have you?
Yeah.
How does it feel? Sore?
What, my head?
Yeah. No, sore. How does it feel? Yeah, Hammers back in Premier League?
Yeah, no, it was a brilliant, brilliant day. First time they've been at Wembley for 31 years. So there's a lot of people who've never seen West Ham. Obviously, we've had two playoff finals in Cardiff, but this was entirely different. You know, the occasion of being at Wembley and walking up Wembley Way with just a sea of claret and blue up that massive stretch. The game, it was a pretty good game, actually. And for a while, it looked like it was going to sum up their season of taking the lead, giving it away and kind of looking like they were going to lose it in the second half because Blackpool played really well, had a lot of chances. They probably should have taken a few of them, and if they'd gone ahead, then I don't think West Ham would have come back from it. But so when Kevin Nolan hit the bar with that volley with about 10 minutes to go, they kind of took a grip on the game, and in the end, Vaz Tay, you could argue, is the signing of the season for $500,000 in January from Barnsley, and that was his 24th goal of the season yesterday.
Amazing. We were just
talking. Anybody expect him to be that good?
No, we were just talking about Vaz Tay actually, and the extraordinary career trajectory that he has had of late, from being Bolton youth under Sam Allardyce to being pretty much cast out of the footballing system, let go by Hibs, and now suddenly become this extraordinarily vital player.
Yeah, I mean, when he was at Bolton, I always remember him sort of coming on and being quite quick and very ineffective. You're always quite happy as a fan of, if you're playing Bolton, if he had the ball, you kind of thought he's not going to do anything with it. And then he just completely disappeared. When we signed him, I was a bit dubious, because this is a guy who hadn't done anything for years and had been playing in Scotland and in Greece and for Barnsley. But yeah, it's just every time he gets the ball, he seems to hit the back of the net. So Allardyce called him his best ever signing, possibly, given he's signed people like JJ Kotcher and Jorge. That's quite a big thing to say.
Jacob, for those of us that are not such regular Championship watchers, what can we expect from West Ham next season? I think the stereotype of West Ham being a footballing side and the stereotype of Sam Allardyce being perhaps not quite so expansive. What are we going to get?
It's hard to say without knowing who they're going to sign. But he's taken a long time to work out his best team, Allardyce. And I think that's only really been seen for the last 6 or 7 games, in which they've actually started to tentatively play some decent football. I know that for a long stretch of the season they were very, very direct, focusing on set pieces and long balls. But with players like Gary O'Neill and Jack Collison and Mark Noble in the midfield, you do edge to playing a more free-flowing, attractive style of football without playing in, say, the style of Swansea or Blackpool did yesterday, who, Blackpool really controlled the midfield and passed it really well. But I think there'll be a heavy focus on set pieces next season for West Ham. They'll be big and powerful. Whether that's going to be enough, it's difficult to know without saying who's going to be coming in the summer, because they definitely need to strengthen that side. I think that's the side they have right now would quite possibly go straight back down.
Really? They committed a lot of resources to this team. I mean, Vaz Tay was a minor signing, but there were a lot of other big money moves, and they held on to a lot of players from the Premier League. If West Ham had missed out on promotion here, there's a chance that it could have had pretty big financial repercussions on the team. But having dodged that particular bullet, do you think they will be investing again heavily?
Yeah, I think they've said that they would give Allardyce sort of about around $20 million to spend if they go up. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's what I heard. I actually wouldn't be surprised if, knowing what he was like at Bolton, if they went for someone, I saw that Raul had been released. He had such a good connection with Real Madrid, Allardyce, when he was at Bolton, signing people like Hierro and Campo, and obviously Jorkaeff as well, who wasn't there. But I wouldn't be surprised if they went for a few cheap foreign older players who he could sort of reinvigorate their careers in the latter stages. And
how bad is your hangover exactly, Jacob?
Sorry,
are you still drunk?
quite possibly. I was in the pub from 10 o'clock yesterday morning. So,
right.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Okay. Well, we'll let you get on with that then, Jacob. Thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations, of course.
Thank you.
Nice one. Cheers, right. Jacob Steinberg.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye. Right. Well, a couple of posts and stuff to kind of finish off. Here is Ben, Panga Heartwork or something. With Allardyce and Chelsea both being successful, is this a great day for negative football? He asks. Slightly downbeat way to look at things.
I didn't think West Ham were particularly negative yesterday. No. I thought they won fair and square, and it wasn't caveman football, but I was quite impressed with them.
It's a great idea, though, isn't it? Caveman football. No, all right. Tick, that's that one. The boy Wilson. Will the Scottish Cup final even get a look in Football Weekly? Or will it be Chelsea, 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 Chelsea? What happened in the Scottish Cup final? Is that today?
Hearts won, beat Hibs.
All right, then.
By a lot.
Okay.
It was 5...
Huddersfield not involved. Yeah?
It was 5-1 last I heard, but I don't actually know what the final score was.
My word.
I completely forgot about it. But someone mentioned to me, yeah, it was 5-1.
Okay.
With not long to go.
All right. And here's Wonk, who says, always end on a joke. So he's posted this in, apropos. Gary Neville and Hodgson. Neville says, don't forget, boss, there'll be no Wayne for the first two matches, Hodgson. I'm not employing you as a weatherman, Gary. Oh, dearie me, that made me laugh. Did it not make you laugh? And I'm under doctor's orders not to laugh at the moment, so that's actually quite a dangerous post.
Because you're on medication.
I'm on medication. Well,
makes
stitch,
you think Huddersfield are in League Two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good. Well, on that note, let me just mention that there'll be a special paper review of the Champions League final. What the Italians, Germans, etc., etc., made of Chelsea's success. That'll be up on Monday. But in the meantime, and of course Football Weekly will be back very, very soon to start looking forward to the Euros, which we'll be covering daily. In the meantime, it's many, many thanks to special guest producer Matt Hill, to Barry Glendinning, to Amy Lawrence, and to John Ashdown, and you, the listener. Have a super time until we speak to you next. Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.
Guardian Podcasts are partnered with audible.co.uk. For a free download, be sure to check out guardian.co.uk/audible, where Guardian listeners can choose any audiobook for free. See the page for more details.